white robe walking across the street?
The next sound was a high-pitched scream and a crunching noise. Transmission ended at this point, and Vandenberg's scoop mission control was not able to raise the two men again. Major Arthur Manchek, his face still creased with sleep, sat at the edge of Comro's desk and listened to the replay of the tape from the van. When it was finished, he said, "Strangest damn thing I ever heard," and played it over again. While he did so, he carefully filled his pipe with tobacco, lit it, and tapped it down. Arthur Manchek was an engineer, a quiet, heavy-set man. He had come from Wright-Patterson in Ohio, where he had been in charge of experiments in spacecraft landing methods. His success led to a promotion and transfer to Vandenberg. Here he did administrative work and hated it. People bored Manchek. The mechanics of manipulation and the vagaries of subordinate personality held no fascination for him. He often wished he were back at the wind tunnels of Wright-Patterson. Now he sighed and puffed on his pipe as the tape spun out for the second time.
"No communications breakdown, I take it?"
Comro shook his head. "We checked all systems at this end. We're still monitoring the frequency."
"We need evidence,"
Manchek said almost to himself. He was considering categories of evidence and possible findings, contingencies.
"Evidence of what?"
Manchek ignored the question.
"Have we got a scavenger on the base?"
"I'm not sure, sir. If we don't, we can get one from Edwards."
"Then do it."
Manchek stood up.
"We'll want a flyby over that town and a complete scan. All canisters to come directly. Alert the labs."
The two lead jets swooped low, dipping gracefully toward the town. They were seemingly inches above the ground as they began to release the phosphorus bombs. As each struck the ground, a blazing white-hot sphere went up, bathing the town in an unearthly glaring light and reflecting off the metal underbellies of the plains. The jets climbed, their runs finished, but Samuel Gunner Wilson, flying the sleek black scavenger, the operational version of the X-18, did not see them. His entire attention, his mind and his body, was focused on the town.
"All yours, Gunner."
Wilson did not answer. He dropped his nose, cracked down his flaps, and felt a shudder as the plane sank, sickeningly like a stone toward the ground. The plane was fitted with two side-slung 16-millimeter cameras, one for the visible spectrum and one for low-frequency radiation. In addition, it had a center-mount Homan's infrared multi-spec camera, as well as the usual electronic and radio detection gear. Gunner pressed the camera buttons and felt, rather than heard, the vibrating whir of the cameras. For a long moment he continued to fall, and then he shoved the stick forward and the plane seemed to catch in the air, to grab and lift and climb. He had a fleeting glimpse of the main street. He saw bodies. Bodies everywhere. Spread-eagled, lying in the streets, across cars.
"Jesus," he said.
And then he was up, still climbing, bringing the plane around in a slow arc, preparing for the descent into his second run and trying not to think of what he had seen. One of the first rules of air reconnaissance was ignore the scenery. Analysis and evaluation were not the job of the pilot. That was left to the experts. And pilots who forgot this, who became too interested in what they were photographing, got into trouble. Usually they crashed. As the plane came down into a flat second run, he tried not to look at the ground. But he did, and again saw the bodies. The phosphorus flares were burning.